What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Rest of Season Rankings Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Seifter, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Bart Wheeler. And Bart, it's dark times for fantasy land. There is a pandemic of injuries across Major League Baseball, especially with pitchers and especially with Tommy John surgery. This has been something that's been an issue, a growing issue across baseball for, I don't know, at least the last 5 years or so. It seems like there's been more and more injuries happening, but suddenly in the last week or so, it's just gotten completely out of control.
It's crazy, man. Like, it's, you know, we do fantasy football too, and it reminds me of like running backs, you know, where it's like there's the zero RB crowd who doesn't want to draft running backs because they just get hurt and they're replaceable. But, you know, these elite pitchers are not replaceable. That's the difference here. You know, we were talking about it before we got started, about how we've got some names added to our rankings at rosrankings.com. You know, we've got a top 520 or so, and a lot of these names are kind of marginal guys. Some of them might be interesting, but, you know, we're not adding pitchers out of nowhere who are just going to suddenly be aces and replace the Spencer Striders of the world. It's just not going to happen.
Probably not, although Spencer Strider himself was a guy who was not really on people's radar as a prospect, and he kind of came out of nowhere himself. So I don't know. Maybe there will be another wave of stars that emerge, but we're losing pitchers at such a high rate right now that it just can't help but deplete the amount of talent in across the league. And teams are going to have to be starting quad A guys. They're going to have to be starting guys before they're ready, you know, prospects before they're ready. You're going to see retreads. You know, you might even see some guys come out of retirement because there's openings now. It's getting really bad. But yeah, I mean, I think that big picture, you know, you have to, like, if this continues, like, you have to devalue starting pitchers in your drafts in future seasons, I think, because, like, the injury risk is just so high. And yeah, I think your comparison to running backs is an interesting one, because it's like running backs are often injured too, and they're high risk, high reward, but that, you know, they're the most valuable players in a lot of formats when they can manage to stay healthy. And you could say the same thing about pitchers. You know, it obviously there's a lot of different baseball formats out there, but generally speaking, if pitching and hitting count half for you, you're probably relying on more hitters than pitchers. So each individual pitcher therefore matters more, or each pitching spot, I guess you could say, matters more, you know? So they can be the most valuable overall players when they stay healthy, but they're just so risky. And it's just a shame. I mean, I feel bad for all the players that it's happening to, but I also think it's like, it's hard to think about what the solution is to this, because, like, you know, it's just, we've become this perfectionist society about these kind of things. Like, these players are so focused on velocity, they're so focused on spin rates, and they're just going 110% all the time. And, like, the human body just was not made to do that. And it's, you know, it used to be back in the day, like, pitchers would throw complete games, like, you know, every time out, and they were probably throwing 70 miles per hour, you know, but it's like, and they had a bunch of breaking stuff and it worked for them. But now it's just a different game, and it's hard to know how to get out of that, because it's like, how, once, you know, if that's what gives you the biggest edge in the moment, like, how do you not use that ability, even if it puts you at greater risk?
Well, I mean, even in the 90s, I think about, like, some of the Braves staffs and stuff, like when Greg Maddux went over there. Greg Maddux is the name that comes to mind, who's not, like, this overpowering guy, but he had, like, the nastiest stuff and the nastiest movement. I don't know what his spin rates were like, though. They were probably pretty sick. But, you know, you probably heard, like, the Justin Verlander comments on it. I mean, those are really interesting. If you haven't heard those, pull those up. There's a lot of perspectives on it. And as far as the impact of fantasy, you know, when Gerrit Cole went out early, like, sort of during draft season, Spencer Strider became this name where it's like, you could consider drafting him almost number one overall, because there was this gap, right? You had Corbin Burnes, who looked great today, by the way. I'm sure you're happy about that.
Yes.
But there healthy. Aren't that many. Yeah, I know, right? There just aren't that many names at the top anymore. So people probably late in draft season, maybe were even reaching even higher in the first round for Spencer Strider. And there's just no sure thing, you know, and guys like Justin Verlander are coming back soon. And, you know, there are some names, Max Scherzer, we've talked about before. There are some injured names and some older guys who maybe will come to the rescue. So, you know, you're right about, like, there are some young guys who could emerge, and maybe there's some old guys who will come back as well.
Yeah, and that was actually a big topic of discussion when we did our position preview episode on starting pitchers, was that, like, you know, there's just a huge gap at the top this season because so many pitchers were already injured. But now you look at it and you do look at those established veteran aces who've done it year after year after year that are coming back from injury, and they look awfully good right now, you know, because
they do.
They're going to miss half the season or whatever it may be, but they're going to come back and actually pitch, and then they have less time to get hurt again, you know? So it's like,
yeah.
you know, if you can bank 80 good innings from a pitcher this season, like, that's kind of a win. It's like, that's like where we are at this point. And I found those Verlander comments just completely fascinating. And, you know, it makes sense because if you look at Justin Verlander's career, he used to be more of a pitch to contact guy for a long time. And that's a big reason probably that he had such great longevity. I mean, he was such a workhorse throwing like 240 innings a season. And that was probably because and you could even see it when you watched him pitch. He was not like going full force on the mound. He was throwing, like he said, like 93, something like that. Now he's trying to push 100 just like everybody else. And lo and behold, he's having more injuries. You know, and it came back to when the ball started, when they changed the ball and it started flying out of the yard more and guys could hit those opposite field home runs. It just changed the way you had to pitch. And then they get rid of the sticky stuff. And then guys are having to put more tension on the ball with their fingers. And that seems like something that could affect your elbow, you know. I'm no doctor, but it just makes intuitive sense that way. Yeah, and then just the analytics and the focus on spin rates and things like that. It's just going to lead guys to going full bore more than ever. So, yeah, the Verlander comments were interesting, and I think there's a lot of good observations about the problem. It's what's the challenge is the solutions, and I was intrigued by his proposal that, and I guess he said Max Scherzer, and he had maybe talked about this, I think he said, but maybe a new rule that would say a starting pitcher has to throw into the sixth or throw six innings or 100 pitches or whatever you want to say, a certain amount of length into the game in order for that team to keep the DH spot. And if you take your pitcher out before that, you lose the DH spot. So then maybe it would encourage a sort of different way of thinking where you prioritize going deeper into games as opposed to trying to go max effort two times through the order and strike out as many guys as you can.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, the solution is the tough part. I mean, and you mentioned the sticky stuff. You mentioned the different ball. I mean, I think Verlander's overall point is, like, it's not just the velocity increase. It's not just the pitch clock, which a lot of people are complaining about. Yeah. There's all sorts of things that go into this. And it's like you said, it's like a pandemic that we have to figure out. It's like, there isn't some, you know, silver bullet that's going to cure this thing overnight. It's going to take years. It probably is going to take some rule changes, and it'll be interesting to see what happens from here. But it's unfortunate that we like live in this world now that this has become the routine. Like, this has become the norm. And I think I told you how I talked to that guy at the barbershop whose son is at VCU. He's already had Tommy John and he's like 20 years old, and that's just like, yep, you do it and then you get back in there. And Strider's now facing his second potentially. And there's other guys who have already had two, you know. It's just like, wow, now it's not just one, it's two, and you're not even 30 years old, you know?
Yeah, and you have to especially feel for those high school kids and college kids that are having to have surgery. I mean, that's just,
right?
That's rough. And a lot of those kids are never going to make it to the big leagues and never going to get that big payday or any of that. So as much sympathy as I have for the star players that are having this happen to them, even more so for those kids out there. But yeah, life goes on, and from a fantasy perspective, it's like it's much lower priority than the individual people's lives that are being affected, the individual pitchers. But it does present a conundrum for us because unlike with those running backs, when those running backs get injured, their backup is suddenly really valuable, and just the opportunity to start doesn't alone make you a valuable fantasy asset in baseball. Like, it's not the same as football, you know. Opportunity is king in football. In baseball, you can join the starting rotation, but if you're no good, then you're no good to fantasy, and you could actually hurt fantasy teams. So we're going to have to go through each of these injuries and try to figure out if there are any potential replacements for these guys that might be fantasy viable. In some cases, I think the answer just might be no.
Yeah, well, we can start with Strider. We've already kind of talked about him a little bit. And I guess as of this recording, we're recording here on, what is it, Tuesday night?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he hasn't officially been placed on any sort of season-ending, you know, IL. They haven't said Tommy John. They haven't said, but, I mean, that seems to be where it's going. We've both lowered him pretty much outside of, what, our top 400 or so. Like, we're both assuming that Strider is probably going to be out for the season. And so I think, like you said, Reynaldo Lopez, he earned that fifth starter spot. We'll see what he does. There's Bryce Elder, who I thought would get that fifth starter spot until sort of the last couple weeks of spring training. I think A.J. Smith-Shawver, who's 21 years old, you know, decent prospect, he's a name to at least pay attention to because he's had some really high strikeout rates in the minors. He started 5 games last year in the majors. Didn't strike out a ton of guys in those games. So, you know, it was a quick cup of coffee, but they might just have to, you know, like you said, insert some of these guys who may not be quite ready. But Smith-Shawver, I think, is kind of the most exciting name because we've seen what Bryce Elder has done. Reynaldo Lopez, I'm not super excited about him, even as like now the fourth starter. So Smith-Shawver is someone who I'm at least, you know, having on my watch list for right now.
Yeah, I mean, depending on your league format, I think all these guys could be on your watch list because the Braves are just one of those teams where it actually is a situation where opportunity is pretty valuable. I mean, this is one of the best lineups in baseball for run support. It's, I believe, a fairly pitcher-friendly environment and a team that just has an amazing track record of getting the best out of their pitchers going back decades. It's kind of like the Dodgers, you know? Like, if a guy gets an opportunity in the Braves rotation, they're interesting for fantasy. And so I would add Dylan Dodd to that list too, because he actually might be the one that gets the first opportunity. They don't need a fifth starter yet. They haven't, like you said, they haven't even said that Strider is going to be having surgery. But I think I saw a tweet from Matt Bowman, or the beat reporter for the Braves today, and he said that they didn't deny that they said that his meeting with the doctor did not suggest he's not going to have Tommy John surgery, but that they don't have an update yet, which he seemed to think meant they're just waiting till he actually has the surgery to provide the update. So not very encouraging if you spent that first round pick on Spencer Strider.
Not at all. Okay, so let's go through some of the others. So there's Shane Bieber, who is having Tommy John surgery for the Guardians. If you look at their, you know, on roster resource there, I mean, we've got Gavin Williams, who should be coming back soon. You know, Tristan McKenzie actually had a pretty nice start the other day, but their Logan Allen did not today. They've got Tanner Bibee, Carlos Carrasco, gosh, 37 years old. So there could be some opportunity for someone. It could be a guy like Xavier Curry. But yeah, Gavin Williams can't get healthy quickly enough. And for people who've rostered him and have him in an IL spot, like, I'll have to check on the latest news for Gavin, but there's lots of optimism, you know, excitement around the former, you know, first round pick in Gavin Williams, some good strikeout stuff. So I don't know that there's a whole lot of, you know, other guys. Like, I'm not adding Xavier Curry to my watch list.
Yeah. Although I will say the Guardians, well, first of all, let me just say about Bieber, that one just completely came out of nowhere too, because he pitched and was fine and there was no issues around his performance the day that it happened. And then it's just like, what is it, a day or two later, you suddenly just see on your Twitter timeline, oops, he's out for the season. Okay.
Yeah.
that's the world we're living in now. But
I know.
The Guardians are another team that has a pretty good track record of developing young pitching. So there may be some names that aren't even on our radar yet. I mean, we're so early in the season right now that we don't have minor league numbers to look at or anything like that. So
sure.
They could easily have some guys develop, but When you lose these players early in the year, there's no logical fill-in. You know, it's like if it's in the summer, then at least you've been able to see your AAA rotation, your AA rotation, see who's doing really well and ready for a call-up. You know, teams don't have that luxury right now, so we'll have to see. I mean, Daniel Espino was like one of their top prospects, and he's injured too. So, there's not like a logical fill in right now the same way that there might be with the Braves. But it is one of those things where, yeah, Gavin Williams, of course, once he's back, is going to be interesting for fantasy. McKenzie, I'll say, like, I heard his stuff didn't look so hot in that outing, even though the numbers did. So we'll have to see. I think he was throwing with a lot reduced velocity. So another one to keep an eye on. He's already had his share of injuries, but we'll just have to kind of wait and see with Cleveland, I think.
All right, let's go to Miami. Yuri Perez, who turns 21 years old this month. You know, we're talking about the young guys. Yuri Perez is one of them. You know, he's super young, so he's going to have Tommy John surgery. That's already been announced as well, like Bieber. And you look at their rotation. I mean, AJ Puck, there was a lot of excitement about him coming into the season. He was looking good in spring training. He's been struggling a bit with the walks and things. Ryan Weathers was, like, I think, leading the league in strikeouts during spring training. I think it helps solidify, at least for guys like Weathers, for Trevor Rogers, you know, because now they have a better chance of staying up. But you've got Braxton Garrett, who is coming up. He's rehabbing. He's scheduled to make his second rehab start, it looks like, Friday in AAA Jacksonville. So I think of him, of Edward Cabrera, guys like that, I think Braxton Garrett is probably the next to rejoin the rotation. We saw him pitch last year when we went to the Nats game. I kind of like Braxton Garrett. What do you think there?
Yeah, I was big on him coming into this season, so I was kind of bummed to see him get hurt before the season even started. Yeah, I mean, Edward Cabrera is also on the mend. He just pitched a rehab start at AAA on Friday, so okay. So he could be back sooner than later as well. Which makes it an interesting situation, because even with Yuri Perez, that was another one that, like, really caught me by surprise, because all of the news on Yuri Perez was positive. And I know, like, we talk about it on the show over and over again, like, guys can be having positive reports, but as they're ramping up, they have the setback, and that's when they have to go under the knife. So that's what happened with Yuri Perez. But it's just the reports were so positive that he was making progress, and it was more than one report. So that one just kind of was disappointing, because you know, the Bieber one was surprising, that the Yuri Perez one was disappointing, because it really did seem like he might have been over the hump towards coming back. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Marlins rotation is wide open. I mean, they don't really have a number one starter. I mean, Lizardo, I guess, is it, but he's been struggling pretty badly. Puck may be better suited for the bullpen. And then, you know, Trevor Rogers, it's been a few years since he was really good. We don't know what Ryan Weathers and Max Meyer are. So I think Braxton Garrett could easily end up being their best pitcher this season. Edward Cabrera has a ton of upside. He's just wild, you know? So, like,
yeah, lots of walks.
So yeah, he's kind of more, he's the wild card, so to speak. But I mean, this team is also terrible. I think they have one win this season so far. So
yeah,
there's not going to be a lot of run support. But you know, lots of young pitchers, and they'll get, if they're not competing for the playoffs, then they probably will give them longer leashes and not be as afraid of them failing. So I guess that would be the silver lining if you wanted to squint and try to see one.
At least they have my boy Jake Berger, you know?
That's true. That's true.
That's their whole offense.
They also have a very pitcher-friendly park. So, I mean,
they do. That
can help these pitchers as well.
Okay, let's head to, Framber Valdez. That was one that, again, kind of came out of nowhere. You know, it's like he exited the start. He's dealing with an elbow issue. He got scratched. He got scratched. So it was just like, this one's still pretty fresh, pretty new. We don't know a whole lot here. So I don't want to speculate on Tommy John surgery with Valdez. But, you know, as far as things go, like Justin Verlander, we mentioned, coming back soon. You know, Christian Javier's looked really good. Hunter Brown has not. J.P. France, I don't think, is like a locked-in starter. I didn't think Ronel Blanco would be, but dude almost threw back-to-back no-hitters. I mean, he took that second one like, what, 5-6 innings? It was crazy. Like, so Ronel Blanco, even the 30-year-old, looks like, I mean, you can't get, like, send him down now. So it's like, who do the Astros, you know, possibly have waiting in the wings if Framber Valdez, you know, has to deal with any kind of injury? Lance McCullers, I don't think is, you know, who knows when that dude's even going to pitch again. And then you've got Jose Urquidy, who's coming back too. So this could be another one where, yeah, Verlander's coming back, but maybe there's some other name or someone who they might stretch out from a reliever into a starter. We've seen them do that quite a bit in Houston.
Yeah, and they're also, this is another franchise that has a really good track record with starting pitching. I mean, they seem to have a breakout pitcher every season that comes out of nowhere, and maybe Ronel Blanco is that guy this year. You know, it was interesting in our league. Like, I was thinking about picking him up for days, but, like, his Same. Schedule is so bad. It's like, I was like, I'm not going to start him in any of these starts, so do I really want to pick up a guy and just have him sit on my bench for a month? Because that's pretty much what you have to do with Ronel Blanco. I mean, that one could really go either way. I mean, yes, he's been amazing so far. What, he's given up one hit total in two games. But, mm-hmm. like, his, you know, his BABIP against is, like, absurdly low, of course. And his strikeouts came way down last game. So he gets a rematch against Texas. Usually the second matchup favors the hitters more than the pitcher. So
for sure.
So that's going to be an interesting one coming up on April 12th. And then he gets Atlanta after that. So it's, he's going to have to continue to prove himself, but it certainly, the Valdez injuries does certainly lock him into a starting, rotation job for the foreseeable future. And then they get Verlander back. I haven't heard any recent updates about Urquidy, but he's a pretty solid pitcher, when healthy as well. So I feel like the Astros are one of those teams that will find a way, and they may even trade for somebody.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm looking at their rotation. It's all righties. And then when Verlander comes, I mean, without Valdez, you know, maybe they could get your boy Rich Hill out of retirement. Did he retire, or is he just without a team?
It's always a gray area, right?
Well, maybe he could go back to Boston. That's the other team we were going to talk about, because Nick Pivetta, and this was also very, very new. This was just today on Tuesday, where Nick Pivetta dealing with elbow issues as well. So I think the latest that I saw was they're optimistic that he'll just, you know, do the 15 days on the IL, rest, and come back. But, I mean, like you said with Yuri Perez, we heard optimism there as well. So not liking the elbow stuff. You know, there's a lot of pitchers who I like for Boston. We've talked about a lot of these guys. Brian Bello actually had a good start today, even though he lost Cutter Crawford, Garrett Whitlock, Tanner Houck. All these guys are looking good. And, you know, they've looked good against teams like Oakland. That's fine. But, like, you know, they're looking good. I don't know who they might have coming up. We were talking about this one before the show, you know, with Giolito being out for the year. I don't know that there's another name that we even know right now if Pivetta were to miss more than just a couple weeks.
Yeah. So the Red Sox are a really interesting team so far this season. And I think a lot of it has to do with Andrew Bailey, their pitching coach, because he is just, his philosophy is to not rely on the fastball. And the Red Sox pitchers, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I know they are throwing far fewer fastballs than any other team so far this season. And they're getting great results from it. And Andrew Bailey, I believe, was he with the Giants last year?
The name sounds familiar. It sounds like, I feel like,
well, he was a relief pitcher for years, but I mean, as a coach,
gotcha.
Yeah. So I think it was the same thing with the Giants last year, where they threw a lot fewer fastballs, than other teams. So, and they also had the fewest walks in the league last season with him as their pitching coach. So, I mean, I think this is a philosophical thing. And it's working so far. I mean, the Red Sox have had very friendly matchups so far. So we're going to have to see if that strategy works once they have to be facing the Yankees and the Orioles. Well, they are facing the Orioles right now this week. But we'll have to see how that goes. But, yeah, it seems like a well – like the Red Sox are a team that has been kind of in the wilderness the last few years, where it's like hard to know what – as a Red Sox fan, it's frustrating. It's hard to know what they're really trying to do. They were like in between rebuilding and contending and just kind of not really having a plan, which is not what you're used to with the Red Sox. I mean, going all the way back to the Theo Epstein years, like this team always seemed analytically driven and to have like a real good sense of like how to build a team. Maybe they're getting back on that track, at least on the pitching side of things.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's stick with the Red Sox. That's pretty much all the big news with the pitchers, but Trevor Story looks like he's going to be out for the season, having shoulder surgery. I suppose there's a chance, like similarly with Matt McClain, you know, these guys could come back at the end of the season. But I think for fantasy purposes, you know, even if you have 3-4 IL spots, I think I'm probably just going to drop Trevor Story, you know, when he goes under the knife. I mean, there's no guarantee when he comes back that he'll even, you know, be good and that kind of thing. And it could just be, you know, fantasy playoff time if you're in a head-to-head or something like that. So I think Story you can let go. But what about these, you know, guys coming up? David Hamilton, you know, his debut, he hit a home run. He's only 1% rostered in Yahoo. Went 0-for-2 today. So obviously this is like, you know, very new player here. Vaughn Grisham, 26 or 7% rostered, close to a rehab start. So I think Grisham is the guy who I would like to stash. But depending on how deep your league is, you could add David Hamilton just to see what happens in the next week or two.
Well, I mean, first of all, there might be room for both of them because
that's true.
Because right now I'm looking at Roster Resource and they have Emmanuel Valdez as their second baseman right now and David Hamilton at shortstop. So,
and Rafaela just stays in the outfield.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, they also have Pablo Reyes, but there's definitely room for David Hamilton to stick if he produces, even when Grissom comes back. And you know, for all the hype about Victor Scott, I mean, David Hamilton stole 70 bases in Double A in 2022, and he stole 57 bases in Triple A in only 103 games last season. So, like, this guy's got wheels. He can really steal bases too. And you know, we've seen it with Victor Scott. Like, that's no guarantee. You can't steal first base. So, like, if these guys don't hit, they're not going to be any value in fantasy. And you know, I do like having more balanced players generally anyway, but if you're hurting in steals, like, it doesn't hurt to give David Hamilton a shot and see if he's running like he did in the minors.
Yep. And then, I mean, Rafaela, I mentioned him too. Like, he's shortstop and outfield eligible. It sounds like he'll play outfield. He's actually one of the most dropped shortstops lately, but I think, you know, I have him in our keeper league just because he's such a young talent. I want to kind of see how things play out. I think if you're in a redraft, I mean, I suppose you could drop him, but it just depends on what your options are. Because like you said, there might be room for all these guys in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, like, and that's I guess, another big picture thing we didn't talk about at the beginning. But I do want to say, you know, we have new rest of season rankings up at rsrankings.com. And I barely made any changes to my top 100, except for taking injured guys out. I mean, there are some guys that we'll get to later in the show who maybe moved up 10 spots or something like that. But generally speaking, like, there's all the data that we had going into opening day is a lot more significant than the data we have since opening day. Unless it's like lineup spot stuff or like, you know, a guy that we didn't really have much of a track record on, like a pitcher, for example. I feel like pitchers' value can change more quickly because they can just completely rework their arsenal and be a different guy. But, like, if you liked Sidon Rafaela coming into the season, like, I wouldn't be dropping him. Like, the reasons we liked him still exist. I mean, he put up great mix of power and speed in the minors, and he's playing just about every day in a good offensive environment. So, like, the fact that he's hitting .233 or whatever so far, I mean, his strikeout rate's not even ridiculously high or anything like that. Like, he doesn't seem overmatched. He just hasn't done a lot so far, but I'm not going to bail on guys like that based on a week and a half or whatever it is.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay. That's a good point, kind of big picture. I'm the same with you. Like, I moved a few guys around, like, in my top 100, but not a ton. The big movers, like, were much further down, and a lot of it right now is due to injury, and the bigger movers are with pitchers who we'll get into in a second. The other big injury news, Luis Robert, dealing with the hip flexor strain. Same, I think it's the same hip he's dealt with before.
It is, yeah.
Says he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, but, like, yeah, I mean, I have him. He was one of my keepers in our league, and my second of six keepers who is now down and out. And, you know, there's optimism that he'll be back around Memorial Day. Sure, that's fine, but gosh, it stinks. Like, it could be an all-star break type thing.
Hey, at least your pitchers are the ones that didn't get hurt. So,
yeah.
Knock on wood, but yeah.
Well, you know, what's funny is, like, we were texting about the Tigers and the Pirates, you know, potential World Series matchup, and now they're playing each other. And, you know, because they're both off to hot starts, so it was a little tongue-in-cheek, of course. But then one of my ace relievers, David Bednar, he's been struggling so much early, and he got lit up today. So
I saw that, yeah.
By my Tigers.
Early on in, you know, especially in roto leagues, those blow-up spots can make your ratios look ugly for a few weeks. You just have to
I know.
Grin and bear it. But going really back to the injuries, I did want to say, is Trevor Story, like, I heard the structure of the bone in his shoulder could be problematic. So, like, yeah, he's not coming back this year. It's not happening. As far as Luis Robert, I saw a separate report that said 3 to 4 months. So,
oh, gosh.
That would be a lot worse than 6 to 8 weeks.
yeah.
So we'll have to see. I mean, it looked pretty bad when it happened. And given it's a recurring injury for a guy who has had a lot of injuries throughout his career, it's hard to, you know, dip into the well of injury optimism on this one, I think. So, yeah, I mean, and even once he's back, like, maybe he doesn't run, you know, and steals are a big part of his game. So, yeah, that's a tough one. I'm sorry, Bart.
and what are the White Sox going to be looking like in June? Like, they're going to be a sub 500 team, you know, and like, they're not going to rush him back, which is fine. I don't mind teams not rushing players back, but yeah, it's like you said, he might not run. And even then, if it could just be longer, and yeah, it's just not a good situation. But I do think, unlike Story, I would hold on to Robert. Obviously, like, when he has been healthy, he's been super productive. I mean, I guess you could say the same for Story, but it's been a little bit longer. Like, Luis Robert's coming off a great season, so I don't think you can just outright drop him, even in like a shallow 8 or 10 team league. I think you got to try to hold him.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Luis Robert was like a third round pick in fantasy drafts. Trevor Story was like a round 12 or 15 pick.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, the timeline is it's not good, but it's not as bad as Trevor Story's. Like, I think there's a pretty good chance Luis Robert does play this season. And, you know, the only way they would rush him back is if they wanted to trade him, I guess. Maybe they rush him back before the trade deadline. But no, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it probably does mean that he'll be out a little bit on the longer side, because they just are going to be so far out of the playoffs by the time he's on the rehab trail.
Yeah. And then I think last week we mentioned his teammate Eloy Jimenez, who I think at the time wasn't placed on the injured list, but now he is. Anything to add on Eloy that we didn't cover last week?
It's the same thing with Luis Robert. It's like these two guys just are always injured. You know, it's like they both have such long injury histories. And at least Luis Robert has had some great years mixed in between the injuries. Eloy Jimenez just seems like, you know, the case of what could have been, you know, like he's still only 27. So maybe he'll end up being one of those late bloomers who has the best years of his career after 30. It's possible, but
it is.
But yeah, I mean, he's never played more than 122 games in a season, and I wouldn't bet on him getting past that mark this season for sure.
I will say, I did add Lenin Sosa to the rankings, top 500. I mean, talking deep leagues here, but he's second and third base eligible. And I was looking at his Fangraphs page and what he did in the minor leagues. He does have some power, not much speed, but he's batting third the last couple of days. And it looked like Moncada left with an injury. So this Sosa kid might just be locked in to, like, batting third for this bad team, which, again, you know, especially, well, I think it's worth like a David Hamilton, whose speed, you know, Sosa could have power. So I think, like, depending on where you are in a deep league, he's at least worth, like, a watch list for now.
Yeah, I mean, the White Sox look... we were joking about this before we went on air. I streamed Logan Allen against them today, and it was, like, the worst lineup anyone... Like, people were tweeting about it. Like, this is might be the worst, like, lineup any team has ever put out there. And then he scored five runs against... They scored five runs against Logan Allen in the first inning. So much for the best laid plans. But yeah, I mean, this team right now, their two best hitters are basically guys who I consider to be pretty colossal disappointments relative to their prospect pedigree, which are the two Andrews, Andrew Vaughn and Andrew Benintendi. you know, both guys that, like, share my name and I was once very excited about for fantasy purposes, but I have no excitement about them any longer.
Well, let's get into some positive on the injury side. We already mentioned Justin Verlander. We talked about Walker Buehler last week, who's, you know, rehabbing. Sonny Gray actually pitched today. In fact, that St. Louis Philly game is still going on while we're recording. Sonny Gray now in line for the win. He actually went five innings, gave up five hits, no earned runs, five strikeouts, no walks. So really nice debut for Sonny Gray, who we know, like, what kind of pitcher he is. And if he's healthy, like, if he can do this, and he was on a pitch count today, so, like, I didn't even know if he'd go five, but he's in line for the win. So, like, you couldn't ask for a better start, I think, from Sonny Gray against Philly.
Yeah, and I was really high on Sonny Gray coming into this season. I was willing to give him a pass for starting the season behind schedule. And just he was so good last year. Like you said, 2.79 ERA, around a strikeout per inning, through 184 innings last year. So that's pretty good durability last season. I think he's a really solid kind of maybe number three starter in fantasy. Maybe a number two on a good day, but ideally a number three.
Yeah, I think so. And another guy who's coming back soon, Nick Lodolo. So I'm looking at his roster rate. He's 56% rostered in Yahoo, so he's available. He's going to make his season debut Saturday against those White Sox who we were just talking about, and it's not at Great American Ballpark. So it's in Chicago on the south side. So, like, I don't know if many people were necessarily starting Sonny Gray right out of the gate. I don't know if you're going to start Nick Lodolo right out of the gate, but, man, he's set up for, you know, this is a nice spot, right, at the Chicago White Sox, who we were just talking about. So Lodolo is someone who I think, you know, if he's available in your league, pick him up. Maybe you don't start him right away, but this is a good one to sort of, like, wait and see kind of what happens here.
Yeah. I was talking before when we were going down that injury rundown about all these franchises that are just really favorable franchises for pitchers to be on. You know, the Braves and the Astros and the Dodgers, and this is the opposite.
I mean, the Reds aren't one of them.
It's basically the Rockies. I mean, it's, you know, and I feel this way about Hunter Green too. It's like Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo are really talented pitchers, and if they were on a different team, I would be much, much more excited about them than I am on the Reds. I mean, if you want to use them on the road, I mean, I wouldn't use him on his first start anyway, though. So,
right.
And it's not like, you know, Wrigley I guess in April, that's the time to pitch in Wrigley. But Nick Lodolo last year had a 6.29 ERA, and he had a 4.35 BABIP against and the 2.62 home run per nine. I mean, those are crazy numbers. Like every time someone put the bat on the ball against him, it was in the gap or over the fence, basically. But his x era was 4.83, so that was a run and a half lower than his actual era and still really bad. So he was good in 2022 in 103 innings. He definitely has swing and miss ability, which you need to have to pitch in Cincinnati. But I'll probably end up being a little lower on him than most people, just because it's just such a difficult assignment to pitch your home games in Cincinnati.
Yep. Well, one of those ball clubs that does a good job is the Rays, and Ryan Pepiot had a really good start it was at Coors Field. He had 11 strikeouts, and that's not easy to do. Like, we talked about spinning the ball and all that and how the ball moves, and it doesn't move as well in Colorado. Well, maybe it does a little bit in this chillier weather. I don't know. Like,
I saw that he was the first visiting pitcher to ever have 11 strikeouts and zero walks in Coors Field.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good stat.
They've had like two pitchers for the Rockies that have done it, but that was the first visiting pitcher to do it. So
he's up 37 spots in our rest of season rankings. A little bit more for you than me. You have him ranked 119 overall. He's 157 overall for me. So he's right there in our combined rankings, just behind Sonny Gray and Justin Verlander, who we were just talking about. Ahead of guys like Bryce Miller, Merrill Kelly, Framber Valdez, who we were talking about. We don't really know the extent of the injury, but yeah, Pepiot moving up our rankings.
Yeah, I mean, I was really big on Pepiot coming into this season, and I did draft him in our league we're in together, so put my money where my mouth is on that one. He's shown a lot of strikeout ability throughout his time with the Dodgers. It was like we've seen with so many other pitchers with the Dodgers. It's just like hard to break through as a young guy and get that opportunity. So he was kind of the guy that they used when, you know, Clayton Kershaw was taking his little stint on the IL or somebody else was out for a few weeks or something like that. You know, he never got a consistent opportunity in the Dodgers rotation, but he's going to get that here in Tampa. And like you said, I mean, it's a really pitcher-friendly ballpark. It's a team that is analytically driven and has a history of developing pitchers and getting breakthroughs from pitchers. So, he had that rough first start, and I watched that game, and he got, like, badly squeezed by the umpire, and it, like, I mean, this was the thing about Pepiot was like he barely walked anybody last season, and that was like really important for his development. And then, you know, because prior to that, he had had issues with walks in his first go around with the Dodgers. He had 6.69 walks per nine in 36 innings with the Dodgers in 2022. And then in 42 innings last year, 1.07 walks per nine. So complete turnaround there. He did walk four guys, I believe, in that first game against Texas, getting squeezed a bit. And then he, you know, threw one right down the middle to Josh Jung before he got hurt and hit a three-run homer. And all of a sudden, his numbers looked bad in that game. But I guess that wasn't an issue with him in Colorado. Zero walks. And you see what kind of upside he has when he doesn't issue the free passes.
Yeah. All right. Going to San Francisco, Jordan Hicks. I think we could probably skip over him a little bit. We talked about him last week. Since then, he's had another start. He actually went seven innings, first quality start of his career. So Jordan Hicks, one of these guys who the Giants are turning from a reliever into a starter. He's now over 70% rostered. So I think a lot of people are looking at this guy in the prime of his career, potentially. I mean, again, please stay healthy, right? You know, we talked at the top of the show about some of these things, and it's in the back of my mind, but it's like, I think I said this last week. It's just like, I think you got to add him and pitch him while you've got him, and just hope that, you know, he does stay healthy. Maybe he'll pitch 120, 30, 40 innings. Who knows? I mean, five innings and seven innings out of his first two starts is good, and he's looked good doing it.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys where it's like, even if he doesn't get hurt, I just don't think they can keep him in their rotation for the entire season. You know, like when guys are transitioning from the bullpen to starter, that's just asking a little too much, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Like he's never thrown 80 innings in a season before, and that the 77 was his career high, and that was his rookie year in 2018. So, you know, this is going to be a big leap for him in innings regardless, as long as he can stay healthy. But yeah, I think 120, 130 is realistic, and great ballpark. And yeah, I mean, he had closer stuff. So like, you know, he's got good stuff. You know, I think it's reasonable to believe his strikeout rate is going to come down quite a bit moving to the starting rotation from the bullpen. I mean, like he's, you know, struck out 11 batters per nine last season, which was far and away a career high, by the way. I mean, he usually was right around a batter per inning, a little over that. So I think he might be under a batter per inning as a starter, but he could still be quite useful if he can keep those ratios down.
Well, Dane Dunning is someone who hasn't been over a batter per inning strikeout in his career, but so far he's looked a little bit better this year in his two starts, and he's moved up almost inside of our top 300, which is not something I thought I would do this early on. But like we said, with pitchers, it's like, you know, you get a couple starts, you see someone who looks a little bit different, and we've moved Dane Dunning up, we've moved his teammate Cody Bradford up. You know, the Rangers are a good ball club. I thought when we did the pitcher preview, I thought it was crazy how we went two episodes and didn't talk about any Rangers. You know, we didn't even talk about Nate Eovaldi until like the third episode, which is just crazy when you're talking about the defending champs. So, yeah, I mean, I think these are names that you need to consider. Michael Lorenzen is, you know, they signed him. He's not someone I'm rushing to the waiver wire to get, but I think he's a watch list guy to see what's going on there. I think these are pitchers who you want to at least consider rostering when you're talking about one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, they also didn't have a must draft closer either. It's they didn't have any must draft pitchers, period. So that's an interesting thing for a team that, you know, is the defending champs. Eovaldi, I mean, is really good. I mean, he's just the durability, I think, is the question with him, but he's clearly their most high floor starting pitcher. But after him, I think you could really make a case for anybody. I mean, it's like Cody Bradford's looked really good so far. Dane Dunning's looked really good. John Gray and Andrew Heaney have not looked so good, but they've both had stretches in the past where they looked really good, you know? So like, I kind of like those guys. I've never been a Michael Lorenzen guy personally, but I have been a John Gray guy, and I've at times been an Andrew Heaney guy. So so like I'm not like saying you should roster those guys right now based on how they're pitching currently, but like, yeah, I mean, between Bradford, Dunning, Gray, and Heaney, like you could tell me that those guys finish in any order in fantasy value, and I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, it's crazy. I remember feeling disappointed last year that the Orioles didn't get Michael Lorenzen and they got Jack Flaherty instead. And I still stand by that. I still think that he would have been the way he was pitching last year and in that ballpark and how much Flaherty just kind of stunk at the end of the year. I still think it would have been a better move. But
well, anyway. The key was Flaherty stunk, right?
It is. Right. Exactly.
He also stunk in his last start, by the way, which poked a little bit of a balloon in the helium he was getting.
Yeah, for sure. Well, any other? Let's see. We've got a bunch of starting pitchers who have moved up our list. We talked about some of the Red Sox. You know, Tanner Houck has moved up. Reed Detmers is a name. Like, I picked him up in our keeper league. I think I picked him up before his second start. I think he ended up with 12 strikeouts on my bench.
Yeah,
I didn't start him.
Yeah, that's like a mixed blessing though, right? Because it's like it makes you feel much more confident about him going forward to show that kind of dominance. I still am a little hesitant on him. I've always had a tough time getting a read on the Angels starters, like whether, you know, they seem to sort of all have some pedigree but have kind of been inconsistent, shall we say, so far.
Sure.
I mean, you know, Griffin Canning I would put in that same category, Patrick Sandoval as well. They've now got Tyler Anderson, who actually looked good in his last start. And now Jose Soriano is in their rotation. He's has some strikeout upside from his minor league track record. So, you know, this is a team that is going to be bad and, you know, not have a ton of run support going for them. But, I mean, Detmers is the one who, you know, looks like he could be breaking through. And I'd be a little like cautious about that personally, but he's certainly a must roster player after that last performance.
Yep. All right. Any of these other guys you want to talk about? I mean, we've got Sean Manaea, who is a name that we talk about every year. He's now with the Mets, looking pretty good. Spencer Turnbull with the Phillies looked really good in his last start. Like these are some guys who I also would consider rostering, and I don't. It's really matchup dependent right now because it's like I want to trust them after one or two starts, but. Do I really trust him? I guess it might depend on the matchup.
Yeah. Basically the way I look at it, you know, we talk about the CBS pod sometimes, and Scott White has this thing called the glob for starting pitchers. After the really good guys, there's just a glob. And I feel like that's kind of true because it's like you have guys who have a track record of being dominant or have like elite prospect pedigree. And then you have a lot of guys who you can either talk yourself into or talk yourself out of, you know, like there's a lot of guys who are reinventing themselves, changing their pitch mixes, like all the stuff all the negative stuff we talked about at the top about how guys are, you know, going max effort and all that. It also means you have a lot of unlikely breakouts. And like, I've become a lot more like willing to at least consider the possibility, like, you know, I mentioned I don't really like Michael Lorenzen. I'll be open-minded about it because, like, he could be a totally different pitcher than he was back in Cincinnati, you know? Like, Sean Manaea, Frankie Montas, those are two other guys I typically have not liked and not wanted to roster. But, like, you know, they seem to be different pitchers now. And Manaea in particular looked quite good in his last start and pitches in a favorable environment. So, like, I'm open-minded about it, but I think the main way to treat these globby pitchers early in the season is just stream them, you know, like pitch them against the, you know, Oaklands of the world and the White Sox of the world. Although that didn't work for me with Logan Allen today, but it will work more often than not to pick on these bad teams. Just make sure you pick the right teams to be bad. Cause like coming into the season, I think a lot of people thought the Pirates would be a team you would want to stream against. And I don't really think that's true right now.
Right, and as the season moves on, you know, you want to also pay attention to, like, home-road splits for pitchers, too. Like, you know, I bet on Mitch Keller the other day to get the win. He's a much better pitcher at home, and I did that when he got his first home start. And these are some things to start looking at. Some of it will carry over from year to year, even these globby pitchers, like you said, like Manaea. Like, you can – some of these guys just might do better on the road versus home and things like that. But maybe, we need to get more data.
Yeah, maybe they've reinvented – maybe he's reinvented himself and finally has – you know, that career year. It's certainly possible. You know, the Phillies back end of their rotation is in Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, Spencer Turnbull are all interesting. I mean, you know, Wheeler and Nola at the top are solidified, but those other three guys, it's kind of, a little less clear is that just how good they can be. So yeah, they're to me though they're all interesting. I feel like Philly is a team that seems to be onto something with what they're doing pitching wise right now.
All right, let's get into some shakers then for guys moving down our starting pitcher rankings, and then we'll get into maybe some quick on the relief pitchers and some position players. So Kevin Gausman, velocity down, getting lit up. I'm trying to see where we collectively ranked him in our rest of season rankings. I don't think we've quite moved him outside of our top 50. Yeah, you have him at 40 overall. I have him at 47, but we've moved him behind guys like Zach Gallen, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Freddie Peralta. It looks like I've moved him behind Tyler Glasnow. So, yeah, I mean, he's sort of in that area, right? He's moving down our rankings. He's not the top five guy we thought he might be, at least entering the season. So even after just two starts, getting a little nervous about Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, I mean, I really resisted the urge to move him down more. And I think the main reason for that is because, like, if we didn't see all these pitchers getting hurt right now, I think there'd be less concern, you know? But, like, the reduced velocity with all the pitcher injuries happening right now, you're just like, oh, God, is there something wrong with him, you know?
Right.
Because I love Kevin Gausman. We talked about it on the pitcher preview show. He was a guy I was in on back when he was with San Francisco, like before he broke out. I could kind of see the heat. I mean, I think, you know, when Verlander talks about these guys who like changed their entire approach based on, the way the game was evolving. Like, I think Kevin Gausman is a great example of that. Like he early in his career with Baltimore, as you know, was like a pitch to contact. Like he got crushed all the time. And then suddenly he became this massive strikeout guy. This just with very few walks and just great, a very strong pitcher. And then, now all of a sudden we see this one game with low velocity and everyone's scared. But, I don't know. I don't want to overreact to it because it could just be a blip, you know? I mean, we often see pitchers have lower velocity in April when it's cold out. So if he has it again, then I think it becomes significantly more worrisome. But I had to move him down some because, like, that could easily happen. So you just kind of have to hold your breath if you have Gausman and hope that his next outing – like, you want the results to be good, but you most of all want the stuff to look like it normally does.
Yep. Next guy on this list, Max Fried. I mean, gosh, he has really struggled in his first two starts. I mean, he didn't get out of the first inning in his first start, almost didn't in his second start against Arizona. His ERA is sitting at 18 with five innings pitched. I mean, he's going to have to chip away at that all year, assuming he stays healthy. And he will. You know, Max Fried could very well end up with like a 3.5 ERA or even better. Like, his ratios we expect to be just sparkling, right? But it's not starting out that way. And Max Fried is always this guy who we tend to rank as like this SP 20 to 25 because that's kind of where he'll be. But we'll, you know, he's not going to be like this ace. He's not going to be some top 5 or 10 pitcher. And so now, I mean, maybe this is a buy low opportunity. I don't think that this is going to be Max Fried, but I'm definitely worried enough that I've moved him down my rankings and moved some guys ahead of him.
Yeah. I mean, you say he's not like a top 10 kind of a guy, but given all the injuries that have happened, I mean, people were talking about like Framber Valdez is like a top 10 starting pitcher coming into the season. And like, I think Max Fried is as good as Framber Valdez. Like, yeah, you know, so like these guys that are like, I mean, I keep mentioning that pitcher preview episode we did. We like, that was kind of one of the big picture thoughts that I had about that was like, we had to elevate guys who wouldn't normally be fantasy aces into the fantasy ace category by default, just because, like, you know, the Scherzers and Kershaws and Verlanders of the world weren't there to occupy those spots, and DeGrom, you know, so so that elevates these high floor, low ceiling guys, and that's what we thought Max Fried would be this season. Is, and you know, he's not having that high floor right now, obviously, because he's getting bombed, but yeah, I just don't really see any explanation for it that would make me think like, oh, this is a trend. Like, you know, like his velocity is normal. I'll just chalk it up to a couple bad starts until I have some reason to think there's something physically wrong with him, or because he's just got this track record of being that high floor guy.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't even know. Like, I'm just looking. His next matchup is against the Mets, who haven't been hitting the ball. I'd probably start him. I mean, I don't have Max Fried in any leagues, but like, I just feel like I would start him. I don't think I'm benching him against the Mets. Are you?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I had the same issue with a very similar pitcher, in my opinion, Joe Musgrove, and he was bad in his first two starts. He wasn't quite as bad as Max Fried, but he was bad.
Right.
And then I started him in his third start because it was a favorable matchup. I said, I'm not, you know, I drafted this guy as my third starter. I'm not going to bench him after two bad starts. And right. He pitched great in his third start. So, I wouldn't be jumping ship.
All right. We mentioned some of these other names. Hunter Brown, we kind of mentioned when we were talking about the Astros. You mentioned Christopher Sanchez. The Tigers, Kenta Maeda, Jack Flaherty, you know, you mentioned wasn't as good in his second start. Kenta Maeda, we were talking about him last episode, is like, look, if he doesn't do it against Oakland, you could probably drop him. Well, he's down to 34% rostered, so a lot of people are dropping him.
I dropped him.
Yeah, I mean, he's only had 5 strikeouts, you know, through 9 innings, and it wasn't like a terrible start against Oakland, but he lost the game, and it's like he just didn't. I feel like if he can't do it against Oakland and the White Sox, like those are like two great matchups to start the year. So yeah, I think you can drop Maeda. It sounds like you did.
Yeah, I did. And let me be clear though, like I still think he could have a fine season. It's more just like if he didn't do well in those good matchups. He's also an older player. He's what, 35 years old.
Probably, yeah.
He's not a sexy name. Like nobody's rushing out to. No one's gonna rush out to add him if you drop him. You know. So like,
right.
Early in the season, you kind of want to make sure you don't miss out on any breakouts. So. There will always be these Kenta Maeda types available on the waiver wire in a 10 or 12 team league. Like they're just not like if he was pitching great in those matchups, you'd just stick with him. But the fact that he's going through a rough patch right now, like he's easy to move on from. And you may very well be able to add him later in the season if he's pitching better. Cause I still do believe in the pitcher himself. He has too long a track record for me to be giving up on him after two starts, but I just don't, he's just not a must roster player in those formats. And, it for him, it might be more just about his performance than about his matchups. You know, like if he gets back to pitching like he can, like then he could be usable even in tough matchups.
Yeah. And I think Hunter Brown is on the flip side. He's down to 82% rostered. That's 4% down in Yahoo in the last day. So people are dropping him in shallow, you know, super shallow leagues, probably 8 and 10 team leagues. I hope people aren't dropping Hunter Brown in like 12 team and beyond because, you know, he faced the Yankees and then at Texas, you know, these are good offenses. And really the game against the Yankees was fine. He struggled against Texas, but like, you know, I don't think I would bench him like at Kansas City. I'd probably start Hunter Brown. I mean, you could consider benching him depending on like what his next matchup ends up being, but he's not like a sure thing like Max Fried, but I'm definitely not dropping Hunter Brown.
Yeah. I mean, he was really, here's the thing, though. Like his strikeout rate last year was really good. His walk rate was reasonable, but he did have a 5.09 ERA last season. So, like, I wouldn't drop him if you believe in Hunter Brown. If you know, like, I would stick with him because he definitely has upside. But he's not like Max Fried. You know, like he's not a guy that's good pitcher. So my leash for guys like that is going to be shorter than it is. With a guy like Max Fried. Because I think back, I've been doing fantasy baseball a long time. I remember a lesson I learned about this with Clay Buchholz. You remember him?
Yeah.
So I had Clay Buchholz, and I was so excited for his upside. and it was one of my, you know, early years doing fantasy, and I just stuck with him all season. And he was bad, you know, and he, like, killed my ratios. And I should have pulled the plug sooner. So, like... Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't drop Hunter Brown yet in most instances, but like he doesn't have enough of a track record. Like you could feel really good about him coming into the season, and then you could just see that he's just not going to be that guy. So you don't want to get take lock with a guy like that.
Yeah, take lock. That's a good point. I mean, you know, we do like the fantasy football thing. Like it's such more like a 17. You know, you have 17 weeks or 16 weeks or whatever it is for fantasy in your playoffs. And you get take lock even worse than that because it's like you'll have a guy for 2-3 weeks and you just keep starting a guy. And at some point, you have to do it. And we're only, 2 weeks into the season in a long fantasy baseball season. So it's a little bit different. But yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I look at another name on the list, Gavin Stone. Like,
yeah,
to me, there's some similarities with him and Hunter Brown. Like, they don't have the track record. There's certain, you know, certain reasons to be excited about them. I mean, maybe you could say Hunter Brown has more upside. But yeah, I mean, they're both like kind of, they were both kind of trendy names coming into the season on, you know, World Series contending top teams and are kind of struggling so far. So, you know, we, like Gavin Stone got dropped in our league and, you know, I didn't like immediately put in a huge bid for him or anything like that. So like, you know, I think it's, it's easy to fall into the glob. You can early in the season, you can be considered like a high end guy, but like if you're not delivering and you don't have the track record, then like, you know, you're not necessarily going to be a must roster player for too long.
No, and I'm not rushing to pick up Gavin Stone because I think Walker Buehler is going to be back soon. So I think Gavin Stone is going to be the first. I mean, looking at that rotation, I think Gavin Stone goes down before a guy like James Paxton. You know, as long as Paxton's healthy, I think he stays in that rotation. And then you got Kershaw who can come back. So I just think Stone's a guy. Yeah, maybe someone picks him up. That's fine. I don't know how many more starts he's going to get in the next month, to be honest. We may only see like a couple more starts out of Gavin Stone. And I don't know how good they'll be.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, James Paxton's next injury is always around the corner. And you could probably say the same thing about Tyler Glass now, sadly.
That's true. All right. Any other names on here you want to talk about?
No, not really. Pitchers? I mean, I think that like all these names, like guys like Tyler Wells and Mike Soroka, AJ Puck, DL Hall, like they're all guys I could see myself getting into if they start pitching better, but like they're not guys you need to roster when they're struggling. You know, it's like
right.
if they start to show signs, then you can pick them up. But unless you're in those like deeper 15 team leagues or AL NL only type leagues, like those are guys that probably can make way for whoever's actually pitching well right now.
So last week we had a ton of closer talk, you know, and we had like so many situations that were becoming more clear after the first week of the season. And after, you know, week two, it's sort of like, okay, we kind of know. And then the only one that really, we had talked about the Royals. We had talked about James MacArthur potentially overtaking Will Smith. And he's looking more and more like the guy. It might be a little bit of a committee there. But yeah, Will Smith is one of the most dropped players. I don't know if I would drop him right away just because I think that Royals, you know, committee could be in flux. And I could, you know, I could see it, the tide shifting as well. Just back. But yeah, James MacArthur, I definitely have him ranked well above Will Smith now. I think I probably have him in my top 200. I'll have to check it. Any thoughts on the Royals bullpen?
No. I mean, I guess the question is just like, is James MacArthur any good?
yeah.
You know, because like, I mean, Will Smith at times has been pretty good. Like, he's never been like a superstar. Like, he's not Mariano Rivera, but like, he's been like a serviceable closer for several different teams over the years. He doesn't look like that guy right now, but I don't know. I just feel like this team is, if you play in a like really saves hungry league, you like probably both of those guys should still be rostered. But if you don't, like, I'm not super excited about the situation in general. I don't, MacArthur does seem to be at the top of the tree right now. But like, you know, he had a 4.63 ERA last season. And then, you know, he put up some ugly numbers in the minors too. So like, you just kind of wonder, like, is he actually going to be good enough to hold down a closer role? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess for now, it looks like we both have MacArthur above Will Smith. You only have him separated by about 10 spots, and I have him separated by 100 spots. So I made a big move, but it is still very early, and I think you're right. I mean, I think both should be rostered in like even a 10 to 12 team league. And then there's guys like Yimi Garcia for the Blue Jays. I think you can probably drop him. It looks like Chad Green, you know, might be the closer you want while Jordan Romano, you know, before he comes back. And then John Brebbia, I had dropped him in our league. I just was speculating on him before the season began, but it looks like it's probably going to be Kopech or some sort of committee, or you maybe don't care because it's the White Sox.
right. I mean, if Kopech is like, you know, striking out a lot of guys, like I wouldn't mind rostering him even if he doesn't get every single save. So like, he's the only one that potentially would be interesting to me there. I I've talked about it before. I don't overrate the fact that guys are on bad teams. I mean, The thing is, if you're on a bad team, like, you might only win 60 games, but a lot of those will probably be one or two run wins because you're not scoring a ton of runs, you know. So they don't have the problem the Dodgers have where you win by 7 runs.
That's true. Kyle Finnegan had a ton of saves last year. I feel like Camilo Duval had a bunch of saves, and I don't think the Giants even made the playoffs.
Yeah, but, you know, I think big picture, like coming into the season, we were talking about how there were more locked-in closers than this season than there were heading into last season. But there's been some injuries, and there hasn't really been guys that have stepped in. And I mean, I guess you could say like Abner Uribe and Kevin Ginkle have pretty much stepped into their roles. You know, and you've seen guys like Robert Suarez kind of run away with their job. But these murky situations like the Oaklands and the Kansas Cities and Toronto, well, Romano's out, they just might never really resolve themselves. Minnesota, I just think it might just be a co-closer situation for the next month or two.
Yeah, Texas, I don't know, man. I did pick up Kirby Yates. I'm over here speculating and prospecting in our league because with Bednar blowing up, and I don't have a whole lot behind him, so I need to find some saves somewhere. And
yeah,
Kirby Yates, he was good once upon a time.
I was offended by that because I have Leclerc and David Robertson. So I see Closer Monkey has Kirby Yates ahead of David Robertson in the pecking order. I'm not really sure why, though. I think David Robertson is the handcuff there, but we'll see.
Well, I know. I thought so. I mean, I definitely thought so, too. And then I'm looking at what happened tonight. Oh, my gosh. They might lose to Oakland. right now, it's the bottom of the ninth, and the Rangers are down 4-3. But Robertson, it looks like, came in first. I mean, it could be high leverage situation, right? So Eovaldi went 5 2/3, and then Robertson came in, and then Yates, and then Leclerc. And then Leclerc blew the save.
Yeah, I think I actually
Yates time, baby.
I think I actually put him on my bench this time. Yes, I did. Whew.
Oh, that's nice.
Although I can't take full credit because the reason I put him on my bench is because I had to start 5 starters this time, so I didn't have enough room for all my closers.
Oh wow, you had a bunch of guys going.
Yeah, I had 5 starters all pitching today.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been a mixed bag, but more good than bad, I guess. I would have hoped for better from Cole Reagans, and I told you about the Logan Allen thing, but Burns and Rodon were excellent, so there is that.
Burns, I mean, Burns is like the number one pitcher now with all these injuries.
I think it's pretty clear. Yeah,
right, like really clear.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into some position players. We're past the hour mark, but let's get into some outfielders. We were talking about your Boston Red Sox earlier when we were talking about Trevor Story and some other guys. I've moved Tyler O'Neill up a ton. You know, I think I probably had him around 200 to 250 overall or something to start the season. But he's been skyrocketing up my rankings. I think he hit another home run tonight. Mm-hmm. I think it might be the only run that they got against Baltimore. And Jaren Duran, you know, I talked about Jaren Duran a lot in the preseason. I said how with him leading off, he could score a ton of runs. He could steal 40 bases. I mean, he's on pace, man. Like, I think he's going to be, and he's got pop too. I think Jaren Duran is just on his way. Some of this is confirmation bias, right? He's off to a pretty good start, and I liked him before the season started. But, yeah, I like these Red Sox. I like what they're doing. Have they moved up your rankings, or did you already have Tyler O'Neill pretty high?
They've been moving up. I mean, Duran I already had very high. I think I'm probably not quite as high on O'Neill as you are. Let's see. I'm pulling it up now. Yeah, you've got him at 97 overall. I've got him at 123. So it's not too far off. But the problem I have with O'Neill is just like, first of all, he has an injury history of his own.
Sure.
I mean, he's only played over 100 games in a season once. So that's an issue. He's only had one good fantasy season, really. And he's had a lot of seasons where he was a pretty big batting average liability. He's making a lot better contact so far this year, so that's encouraging. I don't know. To me, he always has seemed like a player that kind of runs hot and cold, you know? And he seems to be running hot right now, for sure. But I kind of feel like he's gonna go through a slump at some point, and it could be a pretty deep slump. So that's why I'm a little more cautious. Like, I'm not sure I can quite wrap my head around him as a top 100 guy. Although, moving to Boston is certainly a good thing for his fantasy value.
And that's what I was just about to say. Like, we talked in the outfield preview, like, how moving to Boston's a good thing. And his entire, you know, start of the season has been on the road. So this game against Baltimore was the home opener. And he hit a home run. But, like, all this production so far, I know it's a very small sample, but it's all come on the road. So things could just continue. Like, Fenway's a good, could be a good spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been a guy that can give you some category juice in spurts when he's running hot. It's just a question of whether he can put it together for a whole season. Like, he's only done that once. So we'll just have to see if he can avoid injury and maybe avoid strikeouts too.
So your boy, Marcelo Zuna, he's heating up. He's got five homers now. I put a couple bets before the season on lead the league in home run. I probably did four or five. Ozuna and Adolis Garcia were two of them. And so I like the early results on both of those. And Ozuna's starting to heat up. He's someone who is in our top 100 and probably should have been from the get-go. I know last year.
He was maybe from he the was get-go for me. Yeah.
There you go. He should have been for me too. I mean, like, what he did last year, it's like, I don't know. There's definitely some age bias, you know, with Ozuna. But being in Atlanta, being an everyday player, I mean, the guy might hit 40 home runs. So, yeah, he can stay healthy too. Like, they'll DH him. They'll find a way, to keep him healthy too.
Yeah, I love Ozuna. And, like, if, you know, I don't like playing in a lot of different fantasy baseball leagues. I mean, I don't really like playing in a lot of football leagues either. You know, I'd like to just kind of keep it simple with my my rooting interests, and I don't place as many bets as you either. So, like, you know, this is one FOMO, because, like, I don't have Ozuna in our league, and if I drafted 10 fantasy leagues, I probably would have had him in 8 leagues or something like that. But, you know, in our league, it being a keeper league, and me already having 3 outfielders that I was keeping, it didn't make sense for me to draft Marcelo Ozuna, so I'm not getting the benefit of my faith in him. But yeah, I mean, he was one of the most ridiculously undervalued players coming into this season, just based on how good he was last year and his overall track record throughout his career. Like, he's had some down years, but, like, he's had a lot of really good years, and he's in a great, hitting in the middle of a great lineup. And yeah, it was total ageism. You nailed that one on the head.
Yeah, and then, I mean, we can say in the same breath, Teoscar Hernandez. I mean, similar. You know, he's older. He's now with the Dodgers, though. I mean, he looks like he's gonna be JD Martinez this year, basically, who was for the Dodgers last year. You know, he's a top 10 player in fantasy right now. He's just solid across the board. Has 4 home runs. The counting stats are there. You know, he's hitting in that great order. So, yeah, if you drafted Teoscar Hernandez, you're pretty happy. I don't know that there's anything actionable about this. Like, I don't know if you're going to trade for Teoscar Hernandez. I suppose you could. Buy high.
Well, yeah. If the person is actually trying to sell, I mean, like, you know,
maybe they want to sell high. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't usually buy high, but yeah. I mean, what he's doing, he's going to be driving in so many runs this year. And just like you said, with JD Martinez, he had over 100 RBIs in 120 games or something. So, yeah, I mean, Teoscar Hernandez could do that kind of production as well.
Yeah, I think he's the type of guy you could buy high on, because the price shouldn't be that high. Like, you're not buying high on like O'Neill Cruz or Ellie De La Cruz or any other Cruz who's has this kind of talent, right, and is young and has this huge ceiling. But I think the Teoscar Hernandez manager might sell, you know, reasonable.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. All right, any other outfielders you want to talk about? Or I guess, you know, guys you could drop. We talked about Victor Scott in the last episode with Lars Nootbaar coming back soon. I do wonder with Scott, you know, you talked about David Hamilton and the speed. Victor Scott, tons of speed, but, like, he hasn't gotten on base. I could see him going down to the minors pretty soon.
Yeah, I think he probably will be going down to the minors pretty soon. So he got dropped in our league. Nobody picked him up. You know, steals are definitely valuable in our format. So that just kind of speaks to the fact that he's a very marginal roster at this point.
Yep. And I know people say, like, no one cares about your fantasy league or whatever, but I think giving that context of, like, he was dropped in our league and no one picked him up does add some really good context there.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of times you have a guy on your roster and you're like, afraid of shadows, you know? Like, you're afraid to drop a guy because you don't want the experience of someone, you know, bidding half their fab to get him and making you feel like you were an idiot or something. But, like, you know, hearing from other people in their leagues, especially competitive leagues, Just knowing that there's not really that demand kind of can give you that confidence to make those kind of moves.
Yeah, well, you know, a guy, if we go over to first base, Jose Abreu is a name. We were talking about this last year. You know, it's deja vu to me that we're like, here we are again talking about this slow start for Jose Abreu, and I think people were afraid to drop him. This year, people are not as afraid to drop him. He's down to 39% rostered. I think he's a guy you can just drop if you have – I mean, there's other first base options. You know, like there's names on this list. There's Connor Joe, who has a hot start. He always seems to have a hot start. Alex Kirilloff is actually healthy. Michael Bush now has first base eligibility. He started with just having third base eligibility coming into the season, but he's only been playing first base. So there are some more interesting names that I would certainly drop Jose Abreu for. What about you?
Yeah, well, you know I like Michael Bush, so I'd probably give that one a shot. I've liked Kirilloff in the past, but I'm a little more cautious about him this year. Just whether he can stay healthy, and also just what the overall upside looks like. I would say Jose Abreu. It's kind of like what we were saying about Kenta Maeda, like. You could drop him. He could still be fine this year, but you can drop him right now because nobody's going to be in a rush to add him. So going for a hot hand. Like Connor Joe, I think if I had to bet, I would still say Jose Abreu will be better than Connor Joe this season. But like,
yeah,
if you ask me who I want to start next week, I would rather start Connor Joe. So in that sense, like, yeah, I mean, if you were playing a 10 or 12 team league, there's going to be names available throughout the season on the waiver wire. So you just don't need to be locked into holding a guy like Jose Abreu.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you on Michael Bush over Kirilloff, even over a Connor Joe. I think like we've seen, if we're talking about Bush versus Kirilloff, we've seen Kirilloff be injured. He's just like, he's going to get injured. And we don't really know what the ceiling is, but we don't really know what it is for Michael Bush either, you know, coming over from the Dodgers. I think I'd much rather roster Bush and see what happens now that he's, you know, getting more or less an everyday job in Chicago.
Yeah, I agree. Although I still, you know, you have in here the question of whether to drop Vinny Pasquantino in shallow leagues. And I had that exact conundrum, and it wasn't even a thought for me. I mean, granted, we do play in a keeper league, but it's not like Michael Bush is old. And I was easily, you know, willing to let go of Michael Bush rather than Vinny Pasquantino. So like I do still think there's a bit of a gap between those two, even though Pasquantino is off to a pretty slow start. I just think he's got maybe more batting average upside than Michael Bush does.
Absolutely. Vinny's batting 121, no home runs, no RBIs, no nothing. Yeah, he's definitely like a buy low. If someone's dropped him, I would certainly scoop him up if you're like in an 8 or 10 team league.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just one other thing, you know, the guy that we have at the top of the list on this is Spencer Steer. I just want to say, like, he's a guy that was really good last year. And I was a little apprehensive about him this year just because it felt like it kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. And I still thought he was going to be good. I wasn't like fully in on him. You know what I mean? And now I think, for a player like that, seeing him like pick right back up and look great again to start the year really does a lot for my confidence in him being a top 100 kind of a guy.
It does. And then with the Noelvi Marte suspension, the McLean injury, all those things have opened up. I mean, he's got the multi-position eligibility. So, yeah, there's a lot to like there. And he's playing every day with those guys out.
Yep.
All right, second base. You know, we've got some movers. We talked a little bit about Bryce Turang last week. A lot of speed. I think I talked about how I was so, you know, I was miserable after I had rostered him and then dropped him and then missed out on like 6 stolen bases in the first week. But we've added a lot of like utility type guys who are eligible at multiple positions here. Oliver Dunn, who's batting leadoff for Milwaukee, you know, speaking of Milwaukee. We've got Blaze Alexander, who's second base and shortstop eligible for the Diamondbacks, and with Perdomo dealing with the torn meniscus and Jordan Lawler, an injury in the minors, I think, you know, the playing time is there for Blaze Alexander. And then Jared Triolo for Pittsburgh, first, second, and third. He's an everyday type of guy. I don't think there's a whole lot to like there. But how would you rank Oliver Dunn, Blaze Alexander, Jared Triolo, and anyone else? I mean, you could throw Bryce Durang and others if you want in there.
Yeah, well, you could throw Tyler Freeman in there as well with Cleveland. Yeah. I mean, to me, Triolo and Freeman are really not very interesting in a 10 or 12 team mixed league. I'm just not really feeling it. Alexander, a little bit more, but not a lot more. But Oliver Dunn is really my favorite of this group by a pretty significant margin, and I think that's reflected in my rankings. You mentioned he's hitting leadoff. I mean, that most of those guys are hitting towards the back of the batting order. He's hitting at the top. So that's going to – I know it's not the greatest lineup, but that's going to mean more plate appearances, which is what you want to get, you know, those bulk categories. And then he hit 21 homers and stole 16 bases in only 119 games at AA last season. So there's a little bit of, like, power-speed combo with him. I still feel like he's not like a must roster player in a 12 team league, but if you wanted to say like which of those guys has the most upside, I think it's Oliver Dunn.
Okay, and then I'll just throw another name in there, Jose Caballero, who we have slightly above, I think, all those guys. We have him higher than Dunn. Yep, higher than Alexander. So we have Caballero just a little bit higher. He's batting .300, has 4 stolen bases last week. It's like he was stealing a base every game. Not a whole lot, you know, in the power yet. We'll see what happens with Caballero, but he's an everyday player. He is hitting more toward the bottom of the lineup for the Rays, but yeah, he's been hitting the ball. So I think it's like an everyday player, maybe better in a points league, but we like him better, at least according to our rankings.
Yeah. I don't think there's a huge difference between Bryce Terang and Jose Caballero. Terang has been better so far, but like, he also doesn't have great quality of contact numbers. So, like, I feel like he's probably at a high point right now, and he's going to come closer down to Caballero's level.
Yep. All right. Yeah, let's move on to third base. And one name that I kept looking at that I thought was really interesting, and I don't know that we really talked about him much at all. I'm sure we talked about him a little bit in the third base preview, but Brett Beatty, you know, good prospect, now not a prospect, you know, playing every day for the Mets. And I think last year he platooned quite a bit. I'd have to look and see if they're, you know, just facing a lot of righties to start the season. That could be possible, but it just looks like he's been playing every day except for one game against Milwaukee, you know, third or second game of the season, and he pinch hit and hit a home run in that game. So like, he's hitting the ball. He's on a, let's see, 8-game hit streak or something right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. He's got the prospect pedigree. There's a lot to like with Beatty. I think he's an interesting name, and he's, let's see, only 11% rostered. Pretty surprising name. I mean, that he's only 11% rostered. What do you think about Brett Beatty?
Yeah, it's especially surprising considering he plays in the largest media market in the country. But
I know, right?
But I don't know. The Mets fans are probably pretty down on their team right now. So it's been a rough start offensively for the Mets, to say the least. I know Francisco Lindor finally broke out of his 1-for-31 start to the season the other day, but yeah, and JD Martinez keeps getting sidetracked. We didn't talk about him in the injury discussion this week, right? But he's been a little sidetracked with a back injury to make his Mets debut. They certainly need him. But yeah, I mean, Beatty, you know, his upside's limited because he's not going to steal bases. You know, so then the question becomes like, how high of a batting average can he hit for? But like, 25 home run power seems possible, you know, and maybe he could hit like 280 with 25 home runs or something like that if he had a breakout season. So I think he's a highly regarded prospect, like you said. So we can't really say like how good he can be. I mean, we can look at what he's done so far, but like, it's possible he could just be having a big breakout, and then he could put up numbers that we can't even imagine. So yeah, there's definitely upside there.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the names who were the most dropped in Yahoo. Jamer Candelario, Matt Chapman. Candelario batting cleanup in that lineup. I mean, he's struggling a bit early on, you know, but I think I'd have a hard time dropping Candelario for a Brett Beatty right now. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, batting cleanup for the Reds, I mean, that seems like there's going to be a lot of opportunity there. So
yeah.
And Candelario, yeah, I mean, he's not a special player, but he's like in a perfect situation. And you just look at what he did last season. I mean, like, it wasn't off the charts, but 22 homers, 8 steals, over 70 runs, over 70 RBIs, 250 average. Like, I would say he can at least get to those numbers this year, if not better.
Yeah, and I wanted to give your boy Christopher Morel some love. I say your boy because you've had him ranked so much higher than me, and I'm coming around. You have him at 102 overall. I have him now at 129, so I'm moving him up.
Good.
And he's now third base eligible. So I wanted people to realize that since we're talking about third baseman, he's now third base eligible. So that's nice.
Yeah, it is. And I if you want to hear me talk about him, just go back to listen to the last episode because I think I gushed about him for about 45 seconds.
All right, shortstop, Anthony Volpe. You know, he's moving up the rankings. I'm actually going to pull up my shortstop rankings to see, like, where I've put him because, you know, shortstop is a deep position. When we talked about when we did our positional previews, I don't know where we had Volpe, but now, let's see. He's like top 12 now. He's inside my top 100. Like, he's a good power speed guy, and so far this season, he's showing a lot more plate discipline. Again, super small, you know, sample size, but Volpe could be just, you know, he could be a breakout candidate. I don't want to say he's breaking out yet, but he has been batting. Let's see, he's been batting sixth a lot. You know, the concern was that he'd be batting ninth. I'd really like to see him bat leadoff. That's not happening yet, but yeah. Any thoughts on Volpe?
It's been a very promising start. To me, the question with Volpe continues to be, can he continue to hit for power and improve his contact at the same time? And he does. Right. He does have two homers so far, which is nice because the strikeout rate is down. So yeah, I mean that's kind of the question. Like he can definitely steal some bases, and then it's kind of like, is he going to be a batting average liability? Is he going to hit for 20 plus home run power, or is it like one or the other? You know.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing I'm keeping an eye out with him. But yeah, I mean he's an elite prospect on a great offense, a great situation to be in. So yeah, he's got tons of upside. I don't think I'm quite as bullish as you on him so far, but I mean his expected stats, for the record, again, really small samples, but he's batting .417. His expected average is .267.
Yeah,
his slug is .667, expected .348. So like Statcast suggests he's not making super great contact so far this year. So maybe he actually is trading off some of the power for a better batting average. That could be something that's happening there. But yeah, you know, whatever I said about Beatty, like it's even more so with Volpe. Like he could just break out and all these stats become meaningless and he's just becomes a star.
All right, let's wrap it up with catcher. I was talking about how Christopher Morel got third base eligibility. We've got Henry Davis with catcher eligibility now. Woohoo! So that's, I mean, if I'm looking at our catcher rankings, we actually have Henry Davis in our top 10. So he immediately went from kind of a mediocre outfielder to potentially a top 10 catcher. Now he's off to a slow start. So we're talking about rest of season rankings here and where we think he'll be. But we have him ranked ahead of guys like Logan Ohapi, who I have listed here as a mover as well. He had an 8-game hit streak snapped yesterday. And MJ Melendez, who had 3 home runs in his last 4 games. So these guys, you know, are kind of in that, are they top 10 guys or not? But they have some upside. But Henry Davis, I've been kind of waiting on this. And, you know, in our league, I have Wilson Contreras and I drafted Henry Davis. And I don't know who I'm going to have, if I'm going to keep both of them for another week or two. But I might end up just dropping Wilson Contreras. Maybe I'll be dropping Henry Davis. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing with catcher. It gets to be, there's a lot of guys that are all, you know, bunched up together in my rankings. You know, I actually have Henry Davis right in a group with Wilson Contreras, Sean Murphy, and Luis Camposano right now. But and Sean Murphy's on the IL, but he's mm-hmm. going to be back soon. So, yeah, I mean, I just think Davis, like, I don't feel strongly that he's better than Ohapi. I mean, I have Ohapi about 60 spots lower, but, like, I could be convinced either way, honestly. It's just, I think with Davis, the nice thing is the fact that he plays other positions, like, means he probably can get more games played than most catchers and maybe chip in some steals, which you don't get at other positions. But he also could get sent down to the minors or something. I mean, he is really struggling. So, like, he needs to hit I mean, the Pirates could actually be a playoff team this year, believe it or not. So,
That's true.
They probably would like to get more production than he's given them so far, but it is still very early.
Yeah, and honestly, now that he has the catcher eligibility, I just want to see him play in the outfield from here on out.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
All right, I think we got through all the positions. Is there anyone else you want to talk about before we wrap?
No, I mean, you know, MJ Melendez is an interesting one, too. Like, he's a guy that I was very excited about when he was a prospect coming up because he had, like, a 40 home run season in the minors. And then he just, like, he had a few years of just really boring numbers in the major league level. But, you know, the fact he has catcher eligibility in Yahoo does make him more interesting. But he's also just off to a really nice start so far this year. So I'm pulling up his Statcast numbers right now. Yeah, I mean, they mostly support what he's doing. So, yeah, so he's definitely a riser as well. Maybe I'll get back on the bandwagon there.
There you go. All right.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. As a reminder, we do have our new rest of season rankings up at rosrankings.com. Bart and I have 517 players currently ranked, and that it doesn't include guys like Shane Bieber that we had to pull out of the rankings because they're out for the season. Womp, womp. But hopefully we have fewer players to pull out for season-ending injuries next week, so we'll cross our fingers for that. In the meantime, if you have any questions for us, you can always reach out on Twitter. I am at @Andrew_Seifter.
And I am at Barton Wheeler. We appreciate everyone listening to the podcast. If you like the show, please follow, share, rate, and review. We are out of here.
We gone. You've been listening to the Rest of Season Rankings podcast. Go to www.rosrankings.com for more.